CliffCentral.com. Hello there and welcome to the Futurology Show. It's Michael Kahn, and in the studio I've got the little skull rocker.
Oh, fat boy. So good to be here, everybody. Mike, you know what? We're starting to miss Brett.
We are.
Hey, the philosopher. I mean, yeah. I feel like we're just ending up really having deep conversations without someone making random comments anymore. It's fantastic.
So you and I are actually the true philosophers. And poor Brett. Now, let's not take the piss out of him. But Brett's traveling overseas, so I hope he's having a good, productive trip. But it's fantastic to be in studio again. And how are you today, man?
Yeah, it's good. I must admit, I've been excited about a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about around singularity.
Yeah.
The Singularity University guys was out. We interviewed a whole lot of awesome mercs. You've probably heard some of our shows by now. Really good fun. I mean, life seems to be really exciting. I think all the political drama out there is kind of seeping into the world of digital,
and it is.
No longer just talking about universal basic income,
which is a great evolution. Yeah, absolutely. It's good to see the show evolve, and it's good to see the caliber of people we're getting onto the show.
I mean, I'm worried about today's show, though.
I am.
Nah, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, we might get attacked by a whole lot of bots, eh?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but you know, to that point, it was over the weekend, and I was looking at what was happening on Twitter. And there's a lot of activity on Twitter and also Facebook, and I reached out to Andrew Fraser, who's in studio with us, to come and chat to us about this, because really the future of social media, I think, is a very important conversation.
Andrew, we're crazy excited to have you on the show. We love you. We love your comments. We're just privileged to have you on the show, man. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Yeah. Cool, man.
We're excited. Shit,
did you hear that?
What?
The chair's breaking, bro.
Oh, fuck you, man.
It's getting bigger by the week.
I'm just glad you got your top on.
It is good, hey? I had meetings today. I had some very impressive meetings today.
One day I'm going to tweet that meme we made out of you. We did a quick meme when he had his top off, and it was something along the lines of, Mike has a body for podcasting.
I do have a body for podcasting. Don't you agree, Andrew?
I think that's a fair description.
Yeah, see, Andrew's kind of got his head down, eyes on the ground.
Too polite.
Yeah, I've been far too polite, but it's absolutely fine. But let's get into today's conversation. And if you heard some rattling there, that was Brett almost knocking Andrew over the head with the mic there. So, yeah. We're talking about the future of social media because it's evolved, it's changed, and it's become quite a dark place. So Andrew's been doing quite a bit of work on this.
He's owning the space.
He is owning the space. So good for you, Andrew. And I'm really looking forward to this chat because I think there's a lot that we need to uncover here.
Yeah, I don't think it's a dark place. I mean, it's an interesting place. I think the world is a dark place, you know.
So yeah, exactly.
Social media is just a reflection of the real world.
No, that's actually a very good point. Actually,
yeah, that's a very good point.
It is. It's a reflection of how we think and feel.
Maybe we should redefine it as there are many shadows.
There are many shadows, and a lot of those shadows are attacking you guys, and a lot of the key journalists on Twitter at the moment because of the Gupta leaks, eh?
Yeah, I think there's definitely an organized program of...
You've been so polite, yeah.
Yeah. So how do we do it? There's some bad guys that are trying to obscure some information that's out there.
Yeah.
That's really what's happening. It's just obfuscation. Try and throw as much mud, make as much noise as possible so that the real story doesn't get out.
But surely that's just politics, right? It doesn't happen the whole time.
It's just the evolution of media. You know, 100 years ago, there would have been a newspaper article or a pamphlet or something like that that was used. It's just the tool of the age.
That's a good point, right?
Yeah. Let's just
the government controlling the voice of the people, right? And now we're using bots.
Just give us an overview of what's actually going on here. So we've got some context to start.
Yeah, okay. It starts getting... Yeah, I was saying before we started here is that, you know, when you start analyzing the stuff, the deeper you go, the more nuanced it becomes.
So, yeah.
So I always sound like I'm kind of trying to be a kind of an argument to say that it's not as bad as it seems, but fuck yeah, it is. It really is. it's just not quite as clear cut as people would like it to be. You know, because there are people involved and people aren't simple. You know, people are complex.
No, they're not. Yeah.
So So what's happened, what we're seeing is, and I only got interested in this probably 6 months, 8 months ago, beginning of this year, or maybe the end of last year. And I started seeing some kind of pro-Gupta really emails, Twitter posts.
Yeah.
And they just looked a bit, they looked a bit suspect, you know, they looked a bit odd. And I started digging a little bit. And at the same time as I was kind of on my free time, kind of digging through these things, I was suspecting that these were kind of astroturfing sock puppets. You know, somebody had multiple accounts and were just putting out the same information. At the same time, there were a couple of other guys who were probably much more qualified than I am to do this kind of research, a guy by the name of Sean LaRue and a guy by the name of Carl Findlay from Superlinear, were doing very similar stuff. And they were like using analytical tools and actually finding that there were these kind of bot groups, and we call them bot groups. They're partially automated. They're probably people with multiple identities.
What's the difference between a bot and a sock puppet?
A bot effectively should be automated. So it's a programmatic Twitter account.
Yeah.
It basically looks for certain things. It retweets certain things. It does things automatically. So a pure bot would operate independently. It would just work by itself. So the Twitter support account, if you try and DM the Twitter support account, good luck with that. That's a bot.
Okay.
It's a fucking useless bot, but it's a bot. you can use bots for multiple things, you know. So it's immensely easy to create your own. You can use IFTTT and just create a bot that will automatically tweet about certain things. It's really, really simple.
And IFTTT, that's
if this then that.
It's a website.
It's an online automation.
Yeah. I mean, it's fabulous, but I use it to...
No, it's phenomenal.
I use it to set my screen background, so I get all NASA's latest photo posts. I use it to, every time an email comes in, it splits off the attachments and orders in the right areas in G Drive.
Are you trying to tell us how organized you are?
Well, I'm not very organized. That's why.
That's why you're doing this.
That's why she is my new PA.
Ah.
it effectively is just an automation tool that allows you to do anything. You can get it to switch your lights on at night and can basically do anything. It basically takes a certain situation, and if that exists, then it does something.
That does something. If this, then that.
Yeah, you can do that. Or you can use tools like TweetDeck or anything like that to kind of automate a bot.
Mm-hmm.
A sock puppet is just a fake account. It's me posting as somebody else.
Okay.
And putting out that information. So sock puppet. From the concept.
I think Mike was freaked out because he uses sock puppets to flirt with, I'm sorry, to talk to his kids. I was going to say flirt with your wife, but bedtime stories, don't you? You were telling me.
Now, getting back to the subject at hand,
I just spread vicious rumors by Brett Singer.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Moving swiftly on. Yeah. So back to the scenario of what's actually happening here, Andrew. You know, what are these bots actually doing, and what is the shade of grey we're looking at here?
So there are the ones that these kind of Gupta-based ones are. They're there, it seems, to try and make it seem that there's a groundswell of support for the Guptas and for the Gupta-aligned
people. It's many, many, many sock puppets, right?
Yeah. I mean, we're talking hundreds, if not thousands. I've got a Twitter list of about 280, which shifts and changes fairly quickly, because as they block me, they fall off the list. But, you know, I could probably go out and find you 500 if I was prepared to spend the time to do it.
Yeah.
There's literally hundreds of them, and possibly thousands of them.
So how much of Twitter is actually driven by bots?
That's a good question. So Twitter rules will only allow you to pull 1 million accounts to run a test on. So according to the API, the maximum that you can pull is a million. So looking at some of the research that was done overseas on the kind of Russian influence in the American elections.
We'll come to that, because I think that's very interesting.
They pulled out, and they identified, using very crude tools, they identified around about 15%
as being
fake. So they pulled 1 million accounts, and then of that 1 million accounts, they put some criteria on to try and see how many of them were fake. They got to a figure of about 15%, but those tools were relatively crude. So the chances are that it could be more or could be slightly less.
Okay. All right. So the Guptas are going wild. How much of an impact has this bot army actually had on public perception? Do you know? Because it's a war on Twitter. I mean, how far does it spread out of Twitter?
Does Twitter have that much influence on our society?
That's my question. That's really the question I'm asking.
So ask Bell Pottinger that.
Yeah, that's a good point, right?
Yeah.
Ask KPMG.
Sure.
Ask McKinsey.
Yeah, it's crushed their businesses, right?
So, yeah.
Wow.
Yes, Twitter has an impact.
It has an impact. It's a very real impact.
Has it worked for the Guptas? I don't think so. I don't think there's a big enough kind of bot army to obfuscate to the extent that's required. So, for example, in China, on what's it, China Weibo or whatever, their social media, the government has huge numbers of kind of pro-government accounts.
Okay.
So if anything happens, anything that's kind of negative towards the ruling party or negative in China, you have literally hundreds of thousands of messages immediately, which can completely overwhelm the organization. So
surges, so your hashtags start dominating.
It just dominates and it completely obfuscates. These Gupta ones, guys,
it's quite scary, though.
They just don't have the volume to do that. They're there.
I suppose £100,000 a month doesn't really buy that much volume, right?
I don't. So again, digging into the nuances and all that kind of stuff, if you go onto Twitter, everybody will say, yeah, Bell Pottinger did this.
Mm.
I don't think they did.
Okay.
Yeah. I think they may have mentioned it in a meeting. They may have said it was a good idea. If this is Bell Pottinger, Jesus, they deserve to go under because they are shit at what they do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because this is really badly done. It's not really. These guys aren't.
So this is an amateur attempt, compared to the Russians and the Chinese. Yeah, and
compared to the real pros. This is kind of amateur hour. These guys aren't good. They are spending money.
I was going to ask, how much does this kind of thing cost? Because, I mean, you've got amateur hour versus.
I have no idea.
Okay.
I really don't know. But I mean, the indications are that a lot of it is run out of India.
Yes.
Through a kind of a follower farm boiler room operation. So we'll see certain accounts that have that present kind of original content, so they type content in kind of Hindustani English.
Yeah. That don't respond to Afrikaans.
They don't respond to Afrikaans or Zulu or Khoza or Setswana.
No, really?
Or
like that. It's that obvious.
Yeah. It's that obvious.
Yeah, yeah. They just go dark.
And then the names as well. I mean, a combination of very English to very kind of African, you know.
Or like an Indian first name and a Zulu surname. You know, it's just plain.
Got it.
It's just so stupid. In fact, I saw Kai, what's his name? Kai Langer, who had his face on one of the bots. It's like, man, this acts like a power tweeter in South Africa. And you acts so stupid, you've taken his picture and put it on one of your bots. It's like, are you that bad?
No, they're shockingly bad.
Yeah.
And so we'll see them tweeting the kind of original content. And when you check, you'll see that stuff is tweeted from the Twitter web client. Then you'll see that same account and probably 10 or 15 others retweeting something from something else, from another account.
Okay, so they're trying to create their own second level, third level scale.
Yeah, so you'll see this particular account retweeting. And when you check, you'll see that all of the original content is from the Twitter web client and all the retweeted content is from TweetDeck.
So
you've got like a combination of somebody creating content and somebody just automating some content from somewhere else.
It's like us sitting around the table here. Okay, I'm gonna send this out. Okay, guys, go for it.
Exactly.
As stupid as that.
So basically what's happening is you've got somebody who's kind of the master typing all these things for probably 20 or 30 different accounts and actually creating content.
Okay.
And then you've got a boiler room of guys who are just retweeting that stuff from all of these other different
And they
accounts.
Can't even automate that.
There must be some automation.
Of course, you should be able to automate it.
It is. I mean, it is automated to an extent. It's kind of TweetDeck automation where it's done. But there are risks for them to automate. The more you automate, the more easily identifiable it is to Twitter's abuse controls.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So if you get 1,000 accounts tweeting exactly the same thing at the same time, Twitter can pick that up and it'll just shut those accounts down.
But Twitter's pretty shit at this. Whether consciously or unconsciously, I don't know.
Twitter is shit at it. Twitter's abuse controls are 10 times better than they were 6 months ago.
Okay. Yeah, I remember it was ruthless out there. I remember.
But they're pretty shit. We can talk about why they're shit. You know, is it, you know, who benefits from them being shit?
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I think part of the problem is that when you start talking that 15% of all of Twitter is fake, and one of the metrics that they have to present as in order to buoy up their rapidly declining share price is their user base. They can't afford to just take 15% of the users.
It, right?
Yeah, because that's probably 50% of their value just by default. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it feels like this is a really good time to say, if you are on Twitter, please follow us on at Futurology Show, as well as Andrew. And Andrew, I'm just going to quickly grab it here. It's at Offness.
That's it.
And it's ARFNES. S. And S. Oh, yes, two S's. Very, very good point. He's absolutely fascinating to follow, guys.
Yeah, he is.
It's one of my highlights of actually being on Twitter. So, guys, also, if you're listening to the podcast, please like us, share us, give us 5 stars if you think we're great. If we think we're rubbish, let us know. We'll fix this.
Yeah,
or maybe absolutely not. Do we give a shit?
Yeah, we do, to a degree.
Yeah, we do.
To a reasonable degree. We really do. Well, I do. I don't know about you.
No, I do. We're just having fun here, right?
No, we are just having fun. So, but back to Twitter. I mean, why aren't brands and, I mean, even Cyril using exactly the same strategy but to build a narrative? Or are they? They're just not doing it very well.
So brands.
Well, it's because they're so bloody boring.
What's a brand? You know, yeah. I think so there are people using fake accounts online. So your so-called Twitter influencers and the music industry, for example. If you go and look at any of the hip-hop's artists in South Africa, and go and look at their
Instagram accounts.
But let's not go to Instagram because that's a whole other thing. But even on Twitter, if you go into Twitter and you go and look at their followers, I would be prepared to say that most of them, somebody somewhere, has paid for Twitter following.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Of course, man.
I didn't realize it was going to be that kind of rife, right?
Yeah, I'd be prepared to guarantee that somebody, I'm not saying that they did it, but their publicist or their music company juiced it up. Yeah. And it's the same thing with Instagram. I've been
following a lot of our local guys, and I'm trying to get my head around and learn Instagram and do the content play and all that kind of stuff. And I'm struggling to build a following base. And then I'm kind of looking at some of our local guys, and they're sitting with over 1 million followers.
Yeah.
That's just how I don't understand.
Honestly, if you're not – I can understand someone like AKA, okay?
Yeah.
He's huge. He's a big artist. Yeah. He's crap, but he's big.
Yeah.
There are 1 million followers.
No, maybe some nobodies.
Maybe, but then there's some nobodies.
Like it girls, who are running these massive 1 million accounts. I mean, at one stage, I thought maybe they've moved to the US. No, the guys are local. Right?
No, it's follower purchases.
Yeah, it has to be.
There's no way.
Cool. So
I've noticed your account, Mike, is you spend a lot of money on getting followers.
Yeah, I do. I think I only got about 3 followers, which were very, very, very expensive followers. So yeah, it's not a metric I pay too much attention to. But this is exactly it. You know, it's not about the followers. It's about the quality that you have.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's a story of life. You know, if you don't have decent quality, there's no point to it. But you were mentioning before we actually went on air, the Four Horsemen. Do you want to just dig into that? I really like the way you phrased that.
Yeah. So, in the new digital world, I mean, we live in the digital age now. Yeah. There's no question. It's like there. Previously, kind of historically, it was all about governments. It was all about states, nation states. But I think things have changed. I talk about the Four Horsemen, and there's probably 5, but I talk about 4.
It sounds better, doesn't it?
Yeah, the Four Horsemen.
Great archetype.
We talk about Google, Amazon, Facebook. And then, yeah, Microsoft or Apple, you know, depending depending on which side of the, the fence you are, if, like which one's more evil.
Yeah.
And they, these are more powerful than nation states. They have more information. They have more
revenue
power
than some of the biggest top 30s, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And they have the capability to do great evil and great good.
Yeah, they do.
Great evil. And I think there was a big kind of negative view of Google's attempts of to gather user information and what they were doing with it, etc. Probably 5 or 6 years ago, I think was the real
actually lived through that period with Google Plus. And
did you?
There was a when we were launching and building Google Plus, a lot of big drive, but there were a couple of new leaders in the space who really lent hard on trying to cross pollinate against Google's exact stack. So like, take Gmail. Now you have to have a Gmail account to be on Google Plus or vice versa. Or, you know, if you want YouTube, you need Google Plus, you know. And I remember the organization, we led a revolt through memes. So there's an internal meme gen, and all the software engineers and people around the world, we started getting on fighting our leadership around saying, this is not right. And I was quite proud of this is the Google employees fighting against some really poor decisions that led to a lot of these antitrust moves, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what they're like these days, but I agree with you. Look, I remember a lot of that stuff. Poor decisions, man. Trust.
Yeah, and I think there was justifiable concern about the amount of information that Google was scraping and hoarding and putting into warehouses for who knows what use. And I must say, like, right from the bat is, you know, the whole story about, you know, if you don't know what the product is, you're the product.
That's exactly it.
That's fine. You know, as long as you understand that you're the product.
Yeah.
And I have less fear about Google than I have of Facebook and Amazon.
Yeah. Amazon terrifies me, and Facebook is just pure evil, in my opinion. I'm sorry. Yeah. I really do not like Facebook.
And the thing is, the reason that I say that is that Google is very clear in their intentions. They're very straightforward. They say, yes, we take your data. And this is the data that we take. This is what we use it for.
This is our business model.
This is our business model. We sell advertising. They're very upfront that we're an advertising sales business.
Absolutely.
I also think launching their account activity status. So you can go online, you can see how they categorize you. They're totally open around what information they have on you. Totally accessible, and they give you the ability through one click to
update
all your web exposure, all your personal information in one click.
Exactly.
And I thought that was a nice kind of move, hopefully driving and influencing some of the other big evils, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the two that really scare me, and Facebook, because they are black boxes.
Yeah,
they don't share, right?
But Andrew, you could argue that Facebook, and I can't believe I'm actually fighting for them on this side, but you could argue that their business model is just as clear as Google. And I know it's a loaded question.
No, they're not. They're not.
Okay.
Facebook doesn't market itself as an advertising business.
Okay,
they are an advertising business,
yes, but
they don't market themselves as an advertising business.
You're quite right.
It's a nice differentiator, right?
It's a very nice.
We're in industry, and we go, but it's obvious. It's obvious that they're making money off personal data. And for me, there is a big issue on the personal data is that these businesses are making uncapped margins on that free personal data. They're like, we have to build the code and host the platforms. There's a cost there. But the margin is unlimited on them repackaging and repurposing your personal data at scale, and it's anonymous and blah, 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 because at the end the advertisers want to target 10,000 Brett's, not just Brett.
Is it anonymous?
Well, they're not allowed to – they won't sell your data. They will sell 50,000 people like you.
Yeah, but –
There's a very big difference
between what Google is doing, where they're anonymizing data and they're providing advertising for that data. And there's a very big difference between that and audience targeting that Facebook provides.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Hold on. Andrew, you've just blown my mind.
Because Facebook is not anonymizing. They are doing exactly the opposite.
You can load and As an advertiser, I must admit, I got really excited about it. You can load your audience into their audience targeting and essentially target them individually.
Effectively,
holy crap.
Yeah. Effectively, wow. If I knew your mobile number,
yeah,
I could advertise to you and nobody else.
Yeah.
On Facebook.
If you wanted to, right? It's to that level. But my mind's just, sorry, you're broken. Maybe we should get Facebook in and go, let's have a chat about this. I wonder if they're bold enough to have a chat with us.
Well, I think
I'm guessing no, because they don't talk about the black box.
They can't talk about the black box.
They don't talk about it. They don't give out that information. They call it proprietary information.
Yeah.
So, and that's really my concern. And then Amazon is,
you know. What are they doing, right?
Yeah.
They own everything. They're playing in every game.
So they are retail. They are retail. They are eating every single retail opportunity.
They go out, they crush their competitor online, devalue the share price, and then buy them again.
Yeah,
right?
Well,
Whole Foods felt the impact of that.
Yeah, they did that to Whole Foods. I think that was an interesting play. But, I mean, they also just co-opt all the smaller retailers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you just offer them a platform and then you own their business.
Well, and they channel the entire business through them.
And
right?
You own all of their customer information.
Yeah.
This is really important. Are you calm now?
No, I'm very excited. Okay. Sorry. I'm excited. I'm sorry. I've been out of the media world for a bit. Now I'm getting back into it. Sorry, Mike. Mike's desperate to jump in there and I'm just so excited.
But it's a very important model because Douglas Roscoff spoke about it in Throwing Rocks at the Google Bus. I don't know if you read that book. And it's worth a read. But he used the story of Walmart. Walmart would go into a small town. Everyone would celebrate because they think they're getting lower prices. But what they actually were doing is they were going into a town, lowering the prices, putting the small moms and pops out, paying subsistence wages effectively, getting the government to co-sponsor those wages in terms of benefit backup.
Sure.
So it's an extractive model. So by the time they actually have to leave that little town, because there's no money left in the town, because they've bled out the economy of the town, which is what Amazon is just doing at scale across the states, across the world effectively, and it's becoming a massive, massive extractive economy for a very few small individuals. And this is the big challenge here because, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. And they don't have the responsibility because they do have the power. And that's the challenge with the Amazon model.
I put out there the other day, I totally agree with Elon Musk and his view on regulating and putting in the regulations around artificial intelligence, right? And I actually got punished. I mean, a lot of guys went after me. Wow, you're meant to be an innovator. You shouldn't be saying things like this. Regulators slow us down. However,
the principles here that have to be adhered to.
There are certain core principles that, you know what, for whatever intentions, could end up creating the complete opposite effect that they were intended for. And I think that's where the regulators need to step in. Things like artificial intelligence, guys. I mean, we don't know where this is going to go. Let's try and put some kind of guiding control on this.
So right? I'm going to argue the
counter.
The counter on that. And my concern is that. And I'm going to sound like a libertarian, which I'm not.
But it's good. I'm definitely not.
So what I'm saying is just like
calm down.
The real issue of trying to regulate something like that is regulators don't understand. They don't understand. They aren't capable of regulating it because they don't understand what the issues are.
So how do we help the regulators better understand them, right?
Your regulation in this space, I mean, it's a complex thing. It needs to be self-regulation. It needs to be the guys that are developing these things. They need to develop the guidelines in terms of how this stuff should work. You can't expect a nation-state regulator
to be able
to develop regulations. Look at the story on crypto that's out there at the moment.
Correct.
I mean, there's a perfect example. You've got governments saying that we should limit cryptography. That is the exact opposite of what we should be doing. Yeah.
Cryptocurrencies.
Crypto anything. Crypto.
Okay. Yeah.
Cryptography in terms of
the whole stack, right?
Encryption. Yeah. So whatever company who uses encryption should be able to break that encryption of their users. Yeah. That's
so
just
what
wrong.
Happens if the regulation lies in the hands of the community, right? And the community is the five horsemen.
Yeah. No, it's going to change.
Then we fucked.
But I tell you where the change will come in is actually on the exponential technologies that have been built by platforms like Google.
Yeah.
Because the challenge with all of these five horsemen is they're very, very centralized frameworks. You suddenly look – let's just take Uber as a simplistic example. I mean, you could take Airbnb. But if you start using the distributed technology, the exponential technologies that are available, you can create a blockchain that allows you to Uberfy Uber. Because it'll actually disrupt the business model. So I think we're sitting in a very clear transitionary phase here. And it's exactly the same on the social media networks. And the guys are building them. You go do just a fraction of research. You can see that the guys are building social media networks on these new exponential technologies, the DLTs, etc. So the disruption to the five horsemen is coming, which is probably why they're running at such a fast pace right now.
None of them are in this game, right? None of them are willing to contribute to these crypto environments.
No, I think they're there. I think they're
not taking a lead. They're not taking a lead.
I mean, Google's invested a lot, but Google invests a lot in
a lot of stuff, right?
Lots of shit. Yeah. throw it against the wall.
But I also look at the so in that group is Amazon, there's Microsoft, there's Google, and so they all offer cloud computing. Mm-hmm. What I love about the internet is this distributed nature of the network. And what's happening with cloud computing is we all kind of seeing the benefits of centralizing our compute power. Now I'm in the game myself now, right? And I love what it has to offer, but there are some kind of core fundamental principles that a little bit concerning that you could end up having everything on three core major players from a compute point of view. That's why I quite like this distributed approach to distributed ledgers, right?
100%.
And the compute power around that is just distributed again. So that's quite nice.
Absolutely.
So I can see them kind of not being a fan of that.
Absolutely. But can I bring this back to social media?
Sure. Yeah, we've gone a different route.
Yeah, this is actually the topic. I want to dig into what's actually happening on Facebook. You know, we talk about this black box. And what's happening with the Russians, what's happening in the U.S., you mentioned France, because, you know, you can throw $100 million into Facebook and no one will actually know but Facebook that money's gone in there, because what's effectively happening is you're getting a personalized ad to an individual person. And if we look at what actually happened on the Trump election, which is part of
So we're talking clickbaiting now, right?
No, not even there.
Influencer advertising.
If you let me finish my thought.
Are you feeling like I'm interrupting
you? You are interrupting. You're getting excited.
I feel like I'm Brett Lindsay when he was at the Media Tech Show.
No, exactly. You're going back home here. But if you look at what Cambridge Analytica is providing, and you combine that with Facebook, and Cambridge Analytica is a data business that really supported the Trump election, which was able to profile an individual down to very, very specific behavioral triggers and decision-making processes, and they used Facebook to impact those behavioral triggers. Yeah. And I think that did drop about $100 million. Well, I think it was about $80 million.
This is on CopLaunch. This weekend.
They may have showcased it, but there's been quite a lot of expose around this.
Yeah. It was quite a good BBC.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah. So I just wanted to get your insights and understanding of this, because Facebook truly becomes evil here, because they did influence the American election.
Yeah. Yes.
And
they're
Mark,
evil.
And Mark
Zuckerberg. We've got Trump now. Fuck.
No, but Mark Zuckerberg has presidential aspirations.
So, yeah.
I mean,
so that's a whole other story. But yes, so when you talk about, I mean, as a marketer, I'm a marketer.
Yeah.
So
you
talk about dark posts on Facebook, you know, where it's not appearing in any timeline.
Yeah.
You've got a specific audience that you've identified using whatever tools Facebook gives you.
Mm.
Maybe you've got a list of cell phone numbers that you pulled from somewhere else, and you can target exact information directly to a consumer. And in marketing, that's good marketing.
Mm.
But when you start talking about trying to influence people in terms of an election or to spread fake news, which it was used for, you know, to the Russians spreading fake news before the American election, that's evil. And what scares me the most about Facebook is that when was the election? That was November last year. So it's been, 9 months?
Nine months,
10 months, whatever.
And Trump's still there.
It's been 10 months since the election. Facebook only admitted that the Russians bought dark advertising 3 weeks ago.
Yes, that's right. Okay. This is where it all resurged.
And according to Facebook, they only spent $100,000. And
yeah, right.
Facebook isn't prepared to actually provide the ads.
Whoa.
They're not prepared to give that information. So you have the situation where they're admitting that something dodgy was done. They're admitting that they took the money for it.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, they're a business. Yeah. And, you know, the old story, you know.
Got to fill the airtime, right?
Who makes the money? Yeah. It's Facebook. It's making the money. They took the money. And they're not even prepared to let people know what was done. And that's the black box of Facebook. That's Absolutely. The scary thing. So that's $100,000, which in the grand scheme of things is probably not that much.
Yeah.
In a market like the US where you've got, what, 200 million, 250 million people.
Mm.
But is that all? Was that the entire amount that was spent? Or was it significantly more? Or what aren't they telling us? And they won't. They don't give out that information.
Yeah, which is a big concern. And if we look at traditional advertising, I mean, we can see very clearly the media strategy of whatever brand on TV, radio, print, because you can see the adverts. You can actually see the creative. You can see the messaging. So most advertising campaigns are completely
transparent. It's out there, right?
It's out there.
It's easy. Completely transparent. Yeah. Authorities can take action if needed.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All the boards.
So, I mean, we had a similar sort of issue with the British election.
Mm.
Yes, absolutely. And Brexit.
Not so much Brexit. I don't know about Brexit, but definitely during the last British election.
Yeah, Cambridge Analytica were very involved in Brexit. Yeah. So certainly from that psychographic point of view, how much they use social media, I'm not too sure. Yeah.
But definitely the Conservative Party in certain constituencies which were borderline used dark posts, audience targeting to push particular messages within the kind of Facebook British population. So that's happening. I mean, and is it unethical? Yeah, I don't know. I think the problem is that when you start talking about political advertising is regulated in most countries.
Yeah.
You can only do certain things.
Yeah,
you can't.
That's right.
And if you're doing dark posts, no regulator is seeing those dark posts. Yeah. They're not seeing that.
So where the transparency is. So our ask of the likes of Facebook is some transparency around this, right? Especially, and it's a user request. solve a user problem. We'd like to see the transparency around political posts.
Absolutely.
Surely.
It's a similar situation that we have with Twitter. Twitter doesn't want to get rid of fake users because that's one of their metrics. Facebook doesn't want to get rid of advertisers because advertisers pay the bills.
Yeah.
You know? So if you're prepared to pay them,
they'll take your money.
They're prepared to take your money. And they have their rules.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced those rules are strong enough.
Well, I think those rules depend on how much money you're paying.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the problem is that in an organization like Facebook, which is huge, you've got people that are selling advertising who are chasing their targets.
Targets, yeah.
They need to sell.
Correct.
They need to sell.
Absolutely.
You know, it's the guy in the gun store. You know, he's going to sell guns because that's his job.
That's his job. Do you see a solution to this?
Or
kind of a way to a solution?
I think part of the problem is that Facebook is too secretive. And I understand why they are, because they don't want people to be able to game their systems.
Yeah.
But in this case, these things are not things that are being gamed. They're just using their system badly.
They're abusing their system.
So I think that Facebook could definitely be much more open in terms of what they're doing. They could let people know the process, how these things happen.
Yeah.
They could be a lot stricter in terms of what they do. Because I understand that Facebook is not a neutral media.
No, it's
not. By any stretch of the imagination. No. So you have them taking money from the Russians to do dark post advertising, but you also have them manipulating the news feed to favor more liberal media than conservative media.
Yeah.
And
yes.
They admit to doing this.
Yeah.
So it's not a neutral kind of space.
Absolutely not.
And maybe it's expecting too much for them to be neutral. But I think they could be a lot more open and transparent. And transparency fixes, you know, 80% of problem, transparency fixes it. You know, if you're doing something that's really bad, you're not likely to do it in the open.
Correct.
Absolutely. Right? And certainly a huge part of
trust.
This. Yeah, it is trust. I was just going to say, a huge part of this has to be education around. Although sometimes when I look at those clips of the Americans, who the general American seems to be so.
I said, did you just say education will change things? Have you seen Facebook users?
That's why I suddenly paused.
Well, that's where the clickbaiting comes in, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I suddenly paused, because the average American is certainly not.
I'll be honest with you, it's not just Americans.
No, it's not. I'm being a bit biased.
I found myself getting into some fights with guys over during the Trump kind of elections.
Yeah.
American guys, like when you share an opinion going, well, Trump, you're a bit of a tit.
No,
they would go
Russians.
After it.
They're probably Russians.
They're probably Russians. Yeah, that's probably a good point.
Yeah. I mean, they were probably Americans who believed in their free speech, just not yours, which is part of the problem. Yeah. So looking forward, because we're coming to the tail end of the show here, what do you see the future of social media to becoming? Because there's clearly some very deep issues and some very questionable behaviors from these massive platforms, and they're allowing massive abuse. And it is, because it also really goes to show that most people lack any sense of free will whatsoever and are completely manipulable on these platforms. What do you see?
Just generally. I think I like to think that these are problems that are visible to these social networks. I mean, I think that they're visible. I think Twitter knows. I think Facebook knows.
They have to know. Andrew, come on. I mean, they're not that stupid.
They know.
Very bright people, right?
Yeah.
What they need to do, they have to kind of figure out how they're going to deal with it. And it's always that balance of, you know, how do we do this without endangering our revenues?
Yeah.
You know, we want to fix this, but we don't want to lose money. How do you prod them into action to do that? Yeah, generally through regulation and laws, or threatened regulation.
Yeah.
You say that if you don't clean up your house, we'll have to come and do it for you.
Yeah.
And
so you're on side with my opinion. Is that what I just heard?
Yeah.
No,
I know what you mean. Right? There's different levels of regulation.
I mean,
right?
So Google is now appealing antitrust thing in Europe. You know.
Yeah.
And they may win the appeal, etc. But I can guarantee you that they changed some of their business models.
Yeah, they did, right?
In response to
remove you from
being
search,
sued. Being
right?
sued, yeah. You know, correct. they offered some things that changed. And likewise, I think that same thing has to happen to Facebook. And Twitter, I love Twitter. It's my favorite.
Yeah.
It's my favorite social media.
It's easy.
And it's immediate, and I like everything about it, except the fact that it's not very well moderated by Twitter.
Yeah.
But I fear that Twitter will die.
Yeah.
I think that eventually the noise will overcome the signal and it will die.
I mean, that's quite scary, because what you end up with is WhatsApp's owned by Facebook, Facebook's owned by Facebook, Instagram's owned by Facebook.
Yeah.
Okay, so public service announcement. Get off WhatsApp. Get Signal. Get all your friends onto Signal.
I haven't heard of Signal. I've used the encrypted one?
Telegram. Why do you say that, Andrew?
Because Facebook, even though WhatsApp has end-to-end encryption, Facebook still has access to all your metadata.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they still know about you. They know where you're sending the message from. They know who you're communicating with.
Yeah.
So they're still scraping data from you.
Get onto Slack. I love Slack.
The reason I say Signal is the encryption within WhatsApp is based on Open Whisper Systems, which is the guys that run Signal. They're a non-profit organization. They run a voice and messaging service. It's fantastic. It's open source, so you can check the encryption, unlike Telegram, which is open source.
Okay. I see. I didn't realize that.
You can kind of know that nobody's scraping your metadata.
No, nice. But you know what the argument, and I hear it so often, is, well, I don't really mind if they get my data because I'm not hiding anything personally. What's your kind of argument to that?
Yeah, that's my kind of feeling about Google, is that as long as Google's giving me value for the information that they're stealing from me, Yeah, it's fine. Yeah. You know, it's a bit symbiotic. You know, it's great. Yeah. I quite like knowing where my car is. You know,
but you also get the opportunity if you want to go incognito. Not share anything. Yeah, Mike, I know you use that often for porn, right?
But let's finish this thought. Yeah, I do, actually. So, it's great.
But I don't like the idea that using something like WhatsApp, for example, which is just a messaging service, and the value that I'm getting out of that is being able to communicate with someone I know, that I'm passing information. I don't like the idea that somebody can scrape that information and use it to build a customer profile of me, saying that I know this person, and then later on when I'm on Facebook, you use that information.
But in order to target me. But Andrew, it's beyond Facebook because they're using this data beyond Facebook, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's not. They're not limiting themselves to Facebook because they are a data business, and they're using that data to manipulate you, because they're selling it to advertisers.
Mm. Yeah. No. I mean,
it's very personal data, right?
It's very personal.
They're a data business. They're a data warehouse and mining business. That's what they do. So that's the reason that I use WhatsApp, to be honest with you. I'm not saying don't, because other people use it. You need to be able to use it.
Yeah.
So I'm just using this platform to say, please go onto Signal, because the more people are on Signal,
I can use Signal more, right?
I use Gmail, and I know that Google is automatically going scraping all the information.
They're doing it, right?
Yeah, they're scraping all that information out of my emails, and they're going to use it.
Yeah.
That's fine, because I block their ads anyway, so it's fine.
Yeah. I love ad blocker.
It's brilliant, eh?
I love ad blocker.
So actually, I remember what Google was saying, one of the execs was saying, they expect 25% of their user base to be using ad blockers. And it's probably a good thing for the advertiser, because rather target people who want to be targeted.
Exactly.
If you don't want to be targeted, have the choice to be blocked out, right?
Yeah. I quite agree.
But it's quite a steep part of your user base.
It is.
Quite a user base.
I mean, without getting into the complexities of digital advertising, I get incredibly frustrated going onto a site and all I see is adverts.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why I use Safari to actually read all my content, because I can just click the read view and it just it strips all of that stuff out, puts it in a very nice, easy to read, and I can consume that content. It drives me nuts. It's become too much. Mm. So we're coming to the closing end. Any thoughts from you, Brett?
Well, it must have been one of the most exciting ones. I guess it's close to my heart, and
I've noticed that. I've been kicking Brett under the table, just saying, let Andrew finish his thought.
Andrew's like just blown my mind up today, and I just it really is. I feel like I'm going to have to put you on my man wall. Very few people get up there, right?
Now I'm nervous.
Yeah, and you should be. Thank God I've never got up to the man wall. Thank God. Anyway.
So I think fabulous. It's nerve-wracking. I too am an idealist. I hope that we do self-regulate ourselves. And if not, then let's go help the regulators get it done. Socials, it's going to explode.
It has.
Things are going to get worse before getting better. I just think we're in for an exciting ride. I have children, right? So I've spent a lot of time kind of teaching them the do's and don'ts, exactly how you would to not speak to strangers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Those same kind of human principles exist in the social space. And I really hope as consumers in South Africa that we realize that and we teach our kids that.
Well, I do think we've got some solutions, because it comes down to two words, Bell Pottinger. No, it does, though, because it really does. And you were saying this before we started, you know, and it talks to this transparency, because at some point, you know, when it goes too far, you know, you go so far east, you go west. Mm. You know, that's the problem. You do so much evil, you become good.
Mm.
And at some point, no, it has to, you know, the world does rotate. So if they're not going to be managing themselves, at some point, someone's going to rise up and it's going to spark some kind of riot, which will be quite interesting. Any thoughts from you on where to from here, Andrew? Because we got a few minutes.
Mm.
Yeah, I think the good thing is that the the stuff is becoming more openly available. Yeah. You can see it. You know, there's people talking about it. There's research groups that are actually working really, really strongly on it. If you do a little bit of a Google search, there's an Oxford University group that's studying misinformation on social media, particularly by the Russians or state actors. And it's really interesting stuff. I mean, I'm not a social media expert by any stretch of the imagination. Mm. I'm a generalist marketer. That's what I do. I'm a marketing strategist.
Yeah.
I'm learning this stuff. I'm digging into it. I'm, you know, finding this stuff out for myself. And everybody comes to me and says, "Oh, you're the expert on this stuff." I'm nowhere near an expert. I'm just interested enough to try and tease out some information. And a quick Google search delivers huge amounts of information and really, really interesting in-depth stuff. So I like to think that I always say, you know, and I said it earlier, it's like transparency is the thing that fixes a lot of things that go wrong. The more people know about stuff, the more that they're aware of it, the less they're taken in by it. There's always going to be people that are easily influenced, but the more you can get people to think critically about stuff, the less likely they are to be taken in by it.
Absolutely.
And that's you know, I'm an optimist in that way. I think that rationality generally wins out over time.
Yeah.
So let's hope that time period is short.
Absolutely. And I think it comes down to, you know, you've got to be responsible for your own life in this world, and you've got to be responsible for the own data you're putting out there and how people are using it and how they're manipulating it. Because, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I don't really use Facebook anymore. I just actually, I don't want to be in there.
I haven't a Facebook account because there was a certain sites that I needed for OpenAuth.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And that's it.
That's it. I don't post. I don't have friends. I use it sometimes to look at other people's Facebook pages, but I don't post. I'm not connected.
I use it to see what my wife's doing. She's hilarious on Facebook. That's about it.
That's about
it. And then I have a billion people trying to follow me. And I'm like, guys, this is my – if anything, it's my wife's posting my life. Yeah, I don't want you to know it.
No, exactly. It drives me nuts. So suddenly you meet someone at work and they're like, I want to be your friend on Facebook. No, piss off, man. This is my life. It's
follow
my
me,
friends.
Follow me on LinkedIn.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. Andrew, where can people find you? Because I think this is an interesting conversation. And I think it also opens a lot of interesting thinking for brands. And how they can go forward in a transparent and responsible way.
All right. I'm a marketing strategist, so if they want to get hold of me for some work, hint, hint.
Yeah, hint, hint.
Yeah, they can get hold of me, just email info@fraserstratt.com.
Fantastic.
Awesome. Or follow me on Twitter.
Yeah, follow Andrew on Twitter, because it's actually good value. It really is good value. Yeah, 100%. Brett, thank you.
Thank you, dude.
I'm sorry about your shin, but I was like, I want to listen to Andrew. I don't want to listen to you.
No, Mike, but you love listening to me. I know you play my voice when you go to bed at night.
I do. It puts me to sleep. It's a great
trait.
So it's like binaural beats that makes me go down to those deep.
I thought it was my shriekish laugh that got hot and horny.
No. Trust me, that does the opposite. So, Michael Cowan, signing out.
Brett Sinclair, thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you for joining us. Cheerio. CliffCentral.com.